Oh, I love that. I so resonate with that. And I love the metaphor of the like a little like unicorn in the
Totally.
forest, like come on, and we're gonna take care of you and
Yeah.
we'll foster you. And then when you want to go back into the forest, like
Go back
go,
into the
like
forest.
yeah, be a happy lone unicorn.
There'll be
Beautiful.
a
And
bowl of
yes to the
unicorn
cheese,
food
please.
here for you whenever you want to return.
Yes.
Welcome back, Intimates. Thanks for your support on Patreon, making this 2021 season possible. This podcast is about all things intimate: relationships, love, connection, community, consensual non-monogamy, kink, orgies, lovers, and of course, good old-fashioned sex. I talk with old friends and even meet some new ones. I interview people from all walks of life, from recovered addicts to counselors, sex partners to perfect strangers. I'd like to thank my hosts, the Musqueam First Nation, as this podcast is recorded on their unceded ancestral territory, where I was born, where I work, and where I currently live and play. So settle in for an intimate conversation. Sacred sexuality is a simple idea and sometimes a convoluted topic. Susanna Rose Stokes is back today to talk about how intimacy and relationships are shaped by our culture and origin story. Monogamy, religion, military service, BDSM, and lots more. We'll talk even a little bit about unicorn fostering, distinguishing between bottoms and subs in BDSM, and we'll talk about designing relationships. It's going to be fun. Welcome everyone to another session of Intimate Interactions. I'm here with Susanna Rose, a non-monogamous former Marine Corps officer with two combat tours in Afghanistan, who had a spiritual awakening and went on to found Metamorphosis, where she is now an embodied consciousness guide. Welcome, Susanna Rose.
Hi, it's so great to be here again, Victor.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. I'm super curious to talk more about non-monogamy and kink and sacred sexuality today. And you'd mentioned that there was a way that your experiences in the military during your first and second tours, which if folks are curious about, you can go back and listen to our previous episode, which I feel like I should name Semper Fi. It just seems appropriate.
I love it.
Great.
It's perfect.
Yeah, so tell me how that impacted your movement into sacred sexuality and BDSM and kink.
Yes.
Yes.
the shift, right? Like I actually I'm about to go to my 11-year class reunion, which is cool because we were class of 2011 and we're going to have an 11-year reunion because COVID canceled the 10-year reunion.
That
I'm
sucks.
like, you can't make this up. This is awesome. I'm like, okay, I have to go. And I went to the Naval Academy, which is a military academy.
Cool.
So I'm really excited to show up and be there with my like half-shaved head and talking about my new life because who I was when I entered the military and who I am now is so massively different. And a huge part of that was the military itself, was the military experience. So, as I entered into the military, I had all kinds of ideas about what a relationship looked like, about what intimacy looked like, and about what my life path was supposed to be. And it was very much a kind of supposed to be, should be kind of ideology, right?
And you joined the
All.
military, you say.
Yeah, exactly. You don't say. So, my father was in the Marine Corps. My older brother was in the Marine Corps. Every man in my family was in the military in some way, shape, or form. So I joined, and I got married at the very end of college. I fell in love with this man. Actually, even before that, I waited to have sex until I was engaged with this man.
Wow.
So, 19 years old, was wearing the True Love Weights ring, had been conditioned, like hardcore conditioning, to what monogamy looks like, right? Saving myself for marriage, almost saving myself for marriage. It was real close. And but did save myself for my husband. And we were in a monogamous relationship. We're married. I did all the things I was supposed to. And then I got to Afghanistan on my second tour. And I met Andre, who is my partner now. And I was just completely overwhelmed by the energy of this person. I was like, at first, there was absolutely no like sexual interest or connection really, because I wasn't open to it. I was completely closed to the idea of that because I was monogamous and in a marriage, right? So we bonded over loving our spouses deeply and how much we admired them and loved our relationships. And as we bonded, and also in the military, there's a bit of an expectation for women that if I'm a woman and I'm married, I really should not be seen talking to other men in the military who
Wow.
are not married. Yeah,
Got it.
that's yes, exactly. Like that is going to get people talking. And in the military, I'm either a bitch or a whore. So it's like I get to pick one of those, and that's all, those are the only options I
Those are your
have.
roles.
Those are my roles. So I don't want to be like slutty. Don't want to do that. And I don't want to give the impression of that. So Andre was a safe bet because he was also married. And so it was like very okay for us to hang out. And I fell in love with him. Like totally. And I realized in those moments that I was in love with two people at the same time. And I was like, whoa, I had no idea that I could hold this, that I could hold love, deep, deep, connected, abundant love. And granted, there were two types of love, right? One was more of the longer term love of like a relationship, and the other was more, a little bit more lusty because of the beginning phases. But nonetheless, I was feeling love for these two people. And that really rocked my whole world. And we were physical, but honestly, I loved him well before we were physical. And I felt a deep sense of connection with his mind and the way that his brain worked. And I still do to this day. But when we both got back and both of our relationships sort of separately disintegrated, we managed to kind of be in each other's orbit through that whole experience, and ultimately decided to try to be in a relationship of some sort. But we both knew that the idea of the traditional monogamous relationship, which we had both been inculcated into, been conditioned for, been told, I mean, I've got parents, grandparents, great grandparents who have literally had like 40, 50, 60, 70-year relationships with just each other. So I'm like, it's like in my bones, this codependent sort of monogamy. And we wanted to try something brand new. And so we began to design our own process, our own,
Relationship almost.
yeah, exactly. So we have tried all sorts of things, and because we are both risk takers a little bit, we were both Marines, right? Like, so there's got to be some kind of screw loose.
Is the
And
term jarhead offensive?
I mean, I don't think so. Not for me, certainly
Wonderful.
not. No, we call each other jarheads all the time. But I'm like, yeah, it's like I'm a jarhead, but my
The
top
lid is
is a
not quite.
little bit. Yeah, a little sideways. The jar head comes from the haircut, actually.
Oh, that makes
It
so
was
much
like,
sense.
yeah. And I think it was like another country that called them the jar heads because they were like, oh yeah, those guys, those weird guys with their square
Wow.
heads.
And then the US just owned it. They were like, yep, we're
Yeah,
jarheads. We're good with this.
we're jar heads. So we call each other that for sure. And so we began to design this relationship, and we wanted to experiment because we had also been a little bit stifled for a long time. And I will say that it was much harder for me to get outside of my monogamy brain than Andre. Andre was like, woohoo, this is great. Like, let's try all the things. And I was like kind of tiptoeing into the water a little bit. And I was like, I don't know. But
he's also had different socialization too. So like the messaging that he would have got about monogamy would have nowhere near as badly shamed him around, you know, sluttiness or the cleanliness, dirtiness stuff. Like just it would, I mean, like, I don't know how often guys wear quote unquote purity rings, but I don't think that's a thing.
Thank you for validating my experience. Yes, accurate. And I do believe that there is a different social conditioning and a different level of importance and value placed on the feminine virginity or like chastity than
I would say commodification almost.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like your number as a man, right? There's a value in that and a commodification of like, oh, if you've slept with more people, you're more desirable. But on the other side with a woman, then it's like, oh man, you know, avoid her because she's dirty or unclean and in these ways.
Makes absolutely no sense to me.
It's ridiculous.
I'm literally like, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No. You're exactly right. It makes no sense. And also it feels very real in our bodies because we've been told this over and over again. Mm-hmm. And also that like our body and our sexuality is our value.
Yeah.
So I had to really like decondition and also decondition a bit of like, he just wants to sleep around kind of mindset. Right. Which was like, he doesn't want to commit. So he just wants to be able to sleep around with other people. And while I believe that there may have been some energy there, like maybe ask him that question later, but there may have been some of that energy there, but what we had to do was very consciously start to design a relationship that mirrored the structure and the foundation and the fortitude of a lot of the monogamous relationships I had witnessed and that had been a part of my own family, but do it in such a way that we both had our sovereignty and our freedom to be able to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So, which gets me into a little bit of how we actually started. And the way we started was in a dom-sub relationship.
Amazing.
Yeah. Which we also learned very quickly that Susanna is not a sub.
From one.
She is a brat.
From one hierarchy to another.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no, it's like, it didn't quite work for me. My little body was like, I am too, maybe I'm a bottom, right? I'm a little more of a bottom than I am a sub.
Yeah.
But we began to explore all these different avenues for what a relationship could look like and then how we could explore with other people. And that led us into some amazing spaces where we got to explore kink. We got to go to dungeons. We got to explore play parties and even do the way that we really began was through threesomes. It was like inviting another person in. Some might call them a unicorn. It's not my favorite terminology, but I also love unicorns. So, you know,
I've been a unicorn. The way that I look at it is people talk about unicorn hunting and I'm like, yeah, those are the people not sleeping with anyone. 'Cause like, if anything, you're unicorn fostering, you know, like you encourage, you know, some unicorn to like trot out of the forest very gingerly. And it's like Bambi's mom at the edge of the, like, you're really looking. And honestly, like if I could give one piece of advice to people who are interested in looking for a third, I'd be like, do you have a cheese plate? Like, I think that's what you need to be asking yourself. How are you fostering this safe feeling environment for intimacy with a third?
Oh, I love that. I so resonate with that. And I love the metaphor of the, like a little like unicorn in the forest, like, come on and we're going to take care of you and we'll foster you. And then when you want to go back into the forest, like go
back into the forest.
Be a happy lone unicorn. Beautiful.
There'll be a bowl of unicorn food here for you whenever you want to return.
Yes, I think that is the approach that we had much more. We were definitely, I never considered us like hunting in any way. It was more like, hey, are you interested in being in our life, in our relationship? And even still, just the process of exploring those things brought up so much for us that allowed our relationship to get to the place where it is today and to develop intimacy because we were able to talk to each other about really tough things and tough feelings that came up a lot sooner than they might have in a monogamous relationship, where you're not necessarily going to approach jealousy as soon. But if you're in a sexual experience with another person or a couple other people, and you watch your partner be sexual with someone, jealousy is going to like come up. So it really led me on this journey of discovering all of these deeper parts of myself and how I see sexuality versus what kind of sexuality was fed to me, and about like my value as a sexual being, and truly has brought me to a whole new place of being able to be intimate not only with my partner but with other people, and to be able to say yes and no to things that I do want or I don't want. So yeah, I mean it's been an entirely massive life shift that is all for the better.
Wonderful. That's all really exciting information. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about sacred sexuality, kink, or BDSM that you can do quickly, or did you want to do like a separate session for that?
No. I do have a feeling there may be more sessions on some of these, but I would say that to me, kink and BDSM was an introduction to sacred sexuality. That there is so much spirituality in that work, because a lot of it is working through the shadows. It's the shadow work of spirituality in a big way. And there's a lot of people who misunderstand it because it's on the surface seems like it, and yes, there are people who can be just purely sadistic or purely masochistic. I believe that that does exist. However, in the most conscious containers, I would say that the kink space, the BDSM space, is one of the most conscious and consent based communities that I've ever been a part of, and I feel the safest in those containers.
Hard
And
agree.
it's con right.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think all the
it's it
best,
just feels
all
so
of the
good.
very best consent education we have in the mainstream either comes out of the orgy community, like cuddling, and like a lot of Reid Mahalko's work and Marsha Baczynski's work, in my opinion, is either like, I know Reid's is definitely out of the orgy space. I'm not sure how much Marsha's is, but my guess, without speaking for her, of course, is that it probably is somewhat at least. And then if it's not out of the orgy space, it almost all comes from BDSM. Even when you look at Dr. Betty Martin's Wheel of Consent, which I really like, I don't know if it actually comes from the orgy community or BDSM. I don't know that she's spoken on that. I don't know that women in her generation would speak on that if it were from those sources. And again, I don't want to speak for her, but the types of stuff she talks about is literally like, are you the giver or receiver, like top or bottom? She just doesn't use the words top and bottom. And is it your desire or someone else's desire? Like, are you the dom or sub? But she doesn't use the words dom or sub. I'm
But
like,
she
this is
doesn't use
just
those
like
words.
kink 101,
Totally.
but it's like revolutionary in the mainstream for consent.
Yeah, those were the kink spaces were the first places where I heard full on discussions of consent. There was a little bit of that in the church culture, but it was, like
Amazing.
covered in a lot of shame and guilt and like, you're a bad person, don't ever do this. But the openness of the BDSM community was really powerful, and it helped me go through a pretty huge spiritual awakening that actually shifted my sexuality hugely, to go from more of like a sexual, physical sexual person to a much more energetic sexual being. And I spoke about this recently, and the sort of the last thing I'll share that may be a teaser for the future is that sexual energy I learned through this process and through meeting Andre and becoming non-monogamous that sexual energy is just energy, like any other energy, but it is the energy that can create life, which means that we can use sexual energy as one of the most direct routes to meeting our source and to meeting God.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I think that that has, you know, really, really shaped the way that our relationship has gone, and removed a lot of the shame that I felt around it before, which was like, sexual energy is bad, or it's satanic, or it's dark,
sure.
Right? It's actually completely the opposite. It is a really, really beautiful tool that we can use for deeper connection and intimacy.
For sure.
So,
yeah. I mean, if people are, you know, very religious and focusing on like the miracle of conception and childbirth and things like that, none of that's possible without sex. So it's kind of interesting to think of a super creative act, literally responsible for every single one of us being here, that could possibly be framed as not divine is so alien to me as an atheist.
It is absolutely bonkers, right? to think that there is something wrong with something that has created all of these beings that we love so much.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So thank you for asking those questions.
For sure. Susanna Rose, thank you so much for being on the show today.
So how did you like it, Intimates? Discuss your ideas with the community at facebook.com/intimatevictor or tweet me at intimatevictor or follow my Instagram, you guessed it, at intimatevictor. If you can spare the cost of coffee to help the show keep going, head to patreon.com/victorsalmon. We hugely appreciate your help to continue making intimate conversations for you and yours. If not, you can always help other intimacy nerds find the podcast by leaving us a review anywhere online, especially iTunes. Or you can just tell a friend. The opening music is on hold for you, made of algorithmically generated notes and chords and played by an AI-rendered saxophonist. The closing music is Gymnopédie No. 1 by Eric Satie. Both are provided royalty-free, courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Thanks so much for your time, and may your most important relationships be filled with the intimate, rich interactions you crave. Be well.